is lunchtime on a Wednesday. Big, big game for the Nuggets tonight, coming off a victory in Utah for just the second time in Coach Malone's career. The Nuggets went to Utah and came home with a victory. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to the Avs' big win last night over the Wild. And Nate the Great doing, well, great things for the Avalanche. But I want to start with some Broncos, Stoke. We went over a list from CBS Sports about offensive free agents that were available, and we had the conversation of, hey, will they add before the draft, or will they just wait to see what the roster looks like after they make their, right now, eight picks in the 2024 NFL draft. So we talked about maybe a tight end that we liked out there, maybe some depth at offensive line if you can get a value, some value on the contract. Well, the other side of that is the defense, and CBS has it again. So we'll look at some of the names. Edge rusher is something that we've seen the Broncos mocked to take. And the idea here would be sign somebody, and then you free that position up in the draft so you can attack other positions. The first name is Yannick Ngakoue. Available coming off of a down season for him. Just four sacks, only had 34 pressures and a pressure rate, of 8.7%. That's a huge name, Yannick Ngakoue, and what he's been in the league. But I'm afraid like the team that takes the chance here is getting the Yannick on the backside of his career, and he's never going to be that same guy again. Not that he can't be good and contribute, but you're not going to get what you would expect out of the Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah, pass rushing, you know, coming off the edge there for you. I would say no. And I think a lot of these guys, just in general, you're in a situation right now where you're just waiting to after the draft. And then you look and see what you're able to get and not able to get and maybe need some more depth in a position. And then you look at these veteran guys. So, and I think he's one of those guys, like you said. You know, his better days are behind him, but at the same time, could he provide something as a rotational depth type of player?
Yeah. Yeah. It's also what you said. I think you're right on that. It's the draft, and then you'll worry about everything after that. So probably out on edge rushers. Carl Lawson was another name mentioned here from the Jets, but was recovering from an Achilles tear in this final year. So it would be one of those deals that's not pricey, but you know, you seem to get what you pay for. There is a name that I like, and I feel like it's been rumored and kind of floated with the Broncos for, I don't know, two, three, four seasons, and it's mostly because he was born here. Calais Campbell. Interior defensive line. That's probably just a depth piece, but that's a big body. He's going to come and take a couple of blockers and allow for somebody to be free or a linebacker to be free to fill a lane in a running play, but he's 37 years old.
Yeah, you know, still going. Big body guy there right in the middle of your defense. Was with the Falcons last year, and it feels like he's still got a little bit left in the tank, but again, like 37, a bigger guy. Obviously, in the trenches, probably stay away from Calais Campbell. The one great thing is, you know, you can just tell. I don't know him personally, but seems like a great guy.
He does.
Great locker room guy, can be a really good mentor. So, like, right now, I stay away from it. After the draft, as we progress moving forward, that guy would be, you know, if we feel like we wanted that type of presence, where a rotational guy, a guy that can help mentor some younger guys, yeah, then he would be at the top of the list.
I think he's kind of done that the last couple of years, hasn't he? He's not really been in camp early on. He's a late addition to a team, kind of misses some of that stuff with his veteran status. So that could be something even – it doesn't come after the draft. In camp, you know, hopefully nobody gets injured, but somebody will, and you can add a depth piece like that that can kind of just come in and plug and play. Cornerback is what I want to talk to you about, because Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock has the Broncos taking a cornerback. We're going to revisit that later on in the show. But there's a couple of names out here, and it starts with Xavien Howard of Miami. Now, he's also getting into his 30s at 30 years old right now. But I looked at this, Stoke, as you go spend some money on a cornerback. You're going to get a bit more of a veteran presence than you obviously would by drafting somebody and wanting them to come and play right away. Xavien Howard, Stephon Gilmore, who is also a little bit older, but he's been on four different teams in a few years and finds his way in the starting lineup every single time he changes teams. Steve Nelson, that was with Houston last year, a little bit younger there. I would look at the cornerback position, add before the draft, and then you can eliminate that position from your need, at least in the first round, because that's ridiculous, or in the third round, and you can go attack another position. I wouldn't mind at all if the Broncos added a cornerback before the draft.
Yeah, I want value, though. You know, a guy like Howard there, I don't know if you're going to get value because he's probably wanting a nice size contract. So if you can get a player like Stephon Gilmore there, that's, you're right, he was with Indy, he was with Dallas last year, I believe. He's bounced around a little bit, but he's been a starter every single year. And we all remember him. He won Defensive Player of the Year. I think he was with the Patriots, with the Panthers. He's been around, but he's a good football player. Veteran depth there. If the price is right, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
I am. Because of everything that you said. We could use a little bit of extra depth there before the draft, mm-hmm. especially.
Yeah, and like I said, I think if you can add that, you I don't know, do you think they would completely eliminate it from their draft want board if they were to add somebody like that before the draft?
No.
Or it just gets pushed down in the priority list?
No, I don't think you eliminate pretty much anything in the draft. See, I think that's a mistake if you do that, because you want to get really good football players. And so you don't want to miss out on Aaron Donald because you got another defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that, saying don't draft a cornerback in the first round, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's on the priority list, yeah, maybe it drops down a little bit, but I don't think you ever remove it.
Okay.
So if you go out there and you get a cornerback, maybe at 12 you're like, all right, you know, this isn't going to happen at 12. But in the third round, if there's a guy there that you feel is a really great player, then you take him.
Okay.
This is just like a... Usually, in this type of situation, this is like just a one-year rental type of player that you are going to be signing.
Okay.
Especially in the Broncos cap situation. They're not going to be extending. They're not going to be a 3 or 4 year big money contracts, 2-3 years guaranteed. I just don't see them doing that.
Yeah, I mean, you're also going to have to give Pat Surtain over $100 million sooner rather than later. And you know, if it is that rental, and I look at it the same way you do, and you get somebody in that third, fourth round, or Riley Moss starts to pop, and then he takes over. That would be, what, year three at that point for Riley Moss when you get there? That's all I was thinking about, of maybe not eliminating it altogether, but not making it... Cornerback's just not a priority for me, for the Denver Broncos. It's a need for a second side, obviously opposite of Pat Surtain, but that's not by any means a top tier priority for me when it comes to the Broncos and their draft. So that was kind of my thinking behind that conversation.
No. You're spot on. It's in the cornerback position it's almost like the wide receiver position. It's a dependent position. Like, we don't watch Pat Surtain, and we go a whole game without even hearing his name called.
Right,
because he's doing so great. They're not even throwing at him. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, you know, how valuable is a cornerback compared to a pass rusher, right? I mean, how valuable is a cornerback compared to a number one wide receiver, to an elite quarterback, or an elite tight end? So, you know, you start looking at that, and it is a premier position, obviously. You know, one of the positions that you're trying to fill, but at the same time, it's like, I think it's down the list there when it comes to, you know, top positions on a football team.
Okay. Broncos country, how do you feel about it? Would you like to see this team add to the roster before the draft, or do you just wait and see how the draft plays out, and then adjust accordingly to what the holes on the roster are? Tell us at 303-713-1043. Join us there. Yeah, another texter is saying Jaquan McMillian. Remember, he's there as well, and he can continue to evolve, because he had some big-time moments, obviously, for the Broncos last year. So you're right there, 929. He's still there and a big option for the Broncos. All right, let's talk a little bit. In fact, I want to do something. We haven't done it yet today. Let's play the world-famous game.
Oh!
Did Chris Bryant get a hit? And the answer, Stoke, is no.
We need to get some music for that, chicken fingers.
Yeah, we got
to
get something going. And a whole bunch of different yeses and nos. Can we do that so we can just play different ones?
What's the answer?
The answer is no.
That's what we both guessed yesterday.
Not. Yeah, we nailed it. He got four plate appearances. He did draw a walk, but did not get a hit. His batting average is now down to 114. Stoke, we talked yesterday about Blackman, Tovar, McMahon, Diaz. First four batters there. Pretty solid, right? And they've actually been good. Everybody is up over 300
right
in the first four. And then you get down to the next four. That's Chris Bryant, highest paid player. Nolan Jones, highest prospect on the team. Brendan Rodgers, who, when he was drafted, all the Rockies blog boys thought he was going to save the franchise. You put all of them together. Bryant 0 for 3. Jones 0 for 4. Brendan Rodgers 0 for 4. These dudes were 0 for 11 last night with two walks drawn. One walk drawn, excuse me. I gave him too much credit. And three strikeouts, two of which came from Nolan Jones, where he didn't even move the dang bat off of his shoulder. This bottom half of this lineup with your highest paid player, your best prospect, and your middle infielder that was supposed to save the franchise is a disaster right now. And I don't, how does it turn around? They all look like they have no confidence in their ability, and Nolan Jones looks lost at sometimes in the batter's box and certainly out in the outfield as well. How do you turn it around with these three dudes that have just been awful to start the year?
Yeah, I think you just got to tinker with the lineup a little bit because obviously it's very top heavy. And, you know, when you only score two runs, this is what usually the box score is going to look like, right? You're not going to have a lot of guys that are getting it done at the plate, and certainly that was the case last night. Yeah, maybe try tinkering with the lineup, maybe give a guy, a couple days off, a couple games off, whatever the case may be, just to try to get them reset. Baseball's tough. You start going the wrong direction, there's no way out of it. You're playing the next day. And then you're playing the next day. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to get it back going if you're in a little bit of a slump. I don't think there's an easy solution here. Get to work. Get in the cage. You just work on it, and hopefully you can break through a little bit. But you got to have better consistency throughout the lineup. You know, you can't be so top-heavy like the Rockies are.
Yeah, it's just bad from those three in particular, and they're supposed to be such big pieces for this Colorado Rockies team and their turnaround here moving towards the future, and they've been the worst part of the team through the 10, 12 games, whatever they're at here, through this young season. They'll do it again today. In fact, in about an hour, they're going to wrap up this series with the Diamondbacks. Need a win to get their first series win of the year. Another thing, Stoke, it was bad attendance last night. They got up over 18,000, but just 19,000. I don't remember the exact number, but a little over 19,000 last night with not terrible weather, but just the product on the field not being great.
See, I think that's a good number. I know it's y'all tell me it's supposed to be, 25,000?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
I mean, tell me, 18,000, 19,000 on a Tuesday or Wednesday night, Monday, Tuesday games. I'm like, all right, I think that's pretty good. Early in the week for people to show up to watch a three-win team, what are they, 2-3-win team? I look at that and say, all right, that's pretty good. Facing off against the Diamondbacks, name one Diamondbacks player. Last one I knew was Sterling Marte. Is he still playing? Is Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling pitching for him? Like, I get it. They were in the World Series last year. Whatever. I still don't know any of the players. You know, yeah. It's not like they're playing the Red Sox or the Cubs or, you know, this national team. I think that's really good numbers. Like, for me, I don't know. Am I way off?
I think it's also the look of it. Like I said, I watched the first few innings waiting for the Nugs and Avs to start last night. It just looks brutal. We have on, who is it, St. Louis and Philly over there, and it's in St. Louis, and it's rainy, and it's crappy, and it's the middle of the day, and they have more than 19,000 sitting over there. Now, it's St. Louis. They're a baseball market, and we're not, so that's a little bit of it. But I think it's, I mean, it's not a huge deal, Stoke, but I think they're missing 5,000-6,000 people a night, and that obviously is going to add up if that trend continues.
Yeah, like for me, I'm not making a lot of it right now. We'll see what it looks like in, mid-May, June, what the attendance looks like, and see if it is, hey, fans are getting fed up or not. I think ultimately that's when we have to be able to evaluate what is it. Mm-hmm. You know, is it just early in the season and early week games? Or is it, just a bad product and fans are getting tired of it?
We're going to find out. We will obviously continue to monitor what it looks like. They'll go to Toronto and Philly after this and then come home for a couple of series at Coors Field at the end of the month, and the weather should obviously start to change. So we'll see what those numbers look like. All right, let's talk about the Ball Arena Bros. Let's start with the Nuggets, who took care of business in Utah last night, but it's about this evening. They got a big one at 8 o'clock down at Ball Arena against the Timberwolves. Karl Anthony Towns is not going to play, but he's been cleared for full contact, and the Timberwolves' plan is to have him play in a couple of games, at least one down the stretch here. So you're not going to see Kat. What's the plan for Jamal? Will we see Aaron Gordon back in this lineup? Stokes, start with AG here. I hope he's back in the lineup because Anthony Edwards is a problem, and KCP can help solve that problem that is Anthony Edwards, but he can't do it on his own. I would love for Aaron Gordon to be available to make Anthony Edwards' life more difficult because you can slow that dude down. You got a better chance, obviously, of winning tonight and then having a really good chance with the win tonight to be the number one team in the West and have home court advantage throughout.
Yeah, I'll start becoming a little bit nervous if Aaron Gordon isn't in the lineup.
Oh, you will?
Yeah. You know, it's plantar fasciitis, whatever the case may be. Not quite sure exactly what it is. But I'll start becoming a little bit nervous. I don't know he's missed the last couple for sure, uh-huh. Right? I don't know if it's been 3, 4. I know it's been at least 2.
It's 2, I think, is the
number. Okay. And so this is such a big game. And if you're dealing with a little bit of an ailment like he is, okay, you look at it and say, all right, we got our other guys playing. Aaron Gordon, we'd much prefer you to play in the second game of the back-to-back yep. against Minnesota. So let's just wait on that one. But if he's not in the lineup, it's going to be like, it's going to have me questioning his health and that foot and how much longer it's going to be. So hopefully we see him in the lineup. I don't know. For some reason, I'm very optimistic that he's going to be in the lineup.
I am too, because
Why are we optimistic? I mean,
it's not our body.
Right.
Like, hey, my feet feel fine. I hope you're ready to go, Aaron Gordon.
It's just a foot deal. It's like, that's not that bad. Yeah.
Come on, you got another one.
Right.
Freaking figure it out.
Both?
Right. I don't know. I feel the same way you do as well. Like, hey, he's going to go. And I didn't see him. Like, we saw Jamal hurt. He was playing hurt. And you saw AG a couple times, like, especially with his knee and foot. Like, at the free throw line, I'd see him stretch out a little bit or in a dead moment of the game, stretch out a little bit on that side. But it didn't look like he was dealing with a lot of pain. Again, it's not me dealing with it, so maybe he's just stronger than I am. In fact, I know he's stronger than I am. But it didn't look the same way that it looked with Jamal. And I bet that's why we feel that way.
Well, help me out here. And to your point, did he leave in the middle of a game? Did he leave late in the game?
Like, no.
I'm looking up the game log for him to see, and maybe that's why we feel that way.
Was it? I think it was the Clippers or the Spurs game where it's the second half. He attacks.
It's the Clippers because that's the last game he played. He played 36 minutes in that game, and that was on the 4th. To give everyone, so that's 6 days ago today.
Because it was in the second half, and I can't remember the play. He's attacking the rim though, gets a foul. And he kind of walks away from the free throw line and is stretching down and holding his that part of his lower leg, ankle, whatever they're calling it. But you could tell it was bugging him a little bit, at least enough to stretch it out. He did.
So, okay. Which doesn't tell me anything there because you can finish a game the next day you wake up and it's like, uh-oh, yeah. Right? But I think that's kind of maybe why we feel that way about Aaron Gordon is because we kind of saw him finish that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, okay, well, it's got to be minor then. It wasn't like you saw him roll his ankle or hyperextend his knee it just seems like it's not as severe as maybe Jamal's might have been.
Yep.
But, you know, the longer he's out, the more I become concerned, especially if he's not in tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because everyone knows how big a game this is. And if you can go as a player, you're going tonight. I mean, You see how they approached last night? They wanted to win that game.
They did.
You know they want to win this mm-hmm. game. I mean, all of a sudden, you could be looking at the difference between being first seed or the third seed. That's a huge difference. It just is. And a lot of it's riding on tonight.
Yep.
All of that. And so if Aaron Gordon doesn't play, it tells me this might be a lot more serious than what we originally thought.
We should get some information later on in the afternoon, 2-3 o'clock hour. I would imagine 3 o'clock hour is probably closer to when we'll find that out with even later maybe because tip's not till 8 o'clock tonight. So
I like that late tip tonight.
I do too. I'll be in the building tonight.
Oh, look at you.
Go down to Ball Arena and hang out with some of the crew from Rocky Mountain Men's Clinic, and we're just going to be kicking it, man.
That'll be a... I mean, it should be rocking.
Yeah,
it should be a great environment.
It should.
This is playoff basketball, folks.
Yeah.
This is it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your whole season is riding on this game as far as your seeding. And so it's a big regular season game. And it's going to be a great environment, that playoff atmosphere yep. type of environment. That's cool.
I'll be the guy with long hair booing Rudy Gobert every time he touches the
yes.
ball. That'll be me.
Dang, I wish I could be there with you. I like to boo.
Yeah, me too,
depending
man.
On the guy.
Right.
Like, but... I don't want to say I like to boo.
If it's warranted.
Yeah, if it's warranted. But it, and depending on the guy. Like Nolan is in that category. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. And I did it when he returned last year, and that was great. Made me feel really good about myself.
I love that.
Rudy Goober is another one that's on the top of the list. And so there's a few guys that I would boo. Yeah,
I'll be booing Rudy tonight for sure. All right, quick switch to the Avalanche. Other side of this with Nathan MacKinnon locking up that Hart Trophy. But I want to talk about another player, Jonathan Drouin. Stoke, the chemistry between Jonathan and Nathan, it's getting better every night. We talked about their relationship as young men yesterday and the fun videos that are popping up on the internet. But on Nathan MacKinnon's, was his second goal, I think it was, Drew. Jonathan Drouin has the puck at center ice. He sees Nathan, I'm going to use a basketball term because I don't know what it is in hockey, like curl, basically, around a couple of players to come back towards center ice, but closer to the blue line than he is the faceoff circle. And Drouin saw him start to make that turn to come back towards the center of the ice. And then behind his back, with just a little drop pass behind his back, knowing Nathan was going to be there, pick the puck up, and then turn on the freaking turbo boosters and blow by everybody to score a goal. Those two dudes are seeing the game the same way, and more importantly, at the same speed. And man, I just give so much credit to Jonathan Drouin for who he has not really become, but almost returned to this year joining the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, that was a really cool goal, obviously. And, you know, some teammates, they just have that chemistry. And I'll compare them, and they're not quite at this level, but when you look at, like, the chemistry of Manning and Stokely,
yeah,
right? You know,
right.
Like, I mean, they're not there yet, obviously. I mean, that goes without saying, but, you know, that either you have it or you don't.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And and they're getting there. If they keep working hard, maybe they'll get there in the next year or so.
Sure.
But it takes a lot of time, a lot of practice. And but, you know, you look at MacKinnon, you look at, like, Peyton Manning, right? And Drouin's got a little ways to go to be Stokely, but
sure.
But you can see it. You
yeah.
can see that they grew up and they know each other and they are teammates a long time ago and all that stuff, and it's translating to the
That's
ice
right.
here, which is a positive.
I think the only thing he's missing to be a Stokely, maybe get after a referee or something.
Hey, right. Hey, just smack him around a little bit. What's wrong with that, huh?
Yeah, they everybody
I mean, come
nerds
on.
It sometimes.
Right. I mean, if they make a bad call, you got to let them know.
Sure.
Right?
I can't just
keep allowing that stuff to happen. Like,
right.
You're not just going to keep disrespecting me and our team like that, right? So yeah, enough is enough sometimes.
You have to tell people they're making mistakes or else they're never going to fix it.
Exactly.
Especially
people that are very arrogant.
Yes.
And sometimes just tell them it's not going to do it.
That's
so you
right.
just got to, you know, tell them in different ways.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I did.
That's exactly what you did. You did it the best as well.
That's right.
Kelsey will get upset with me from time to time because, like, if I see someone park wrong, I'm going to be like, hey, I'm going to go tell them they parked bad.
I parked bad today, by the way.
You did?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to you after the show.
And I did it on purpose.
Really?
Yeah, I did it on purpose today. I did.
Why?
I did. Because I didn't want anybody parking next to me, honestly.
You know what? I actually respect that.
And I park far enough away where no one should park next to me here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a few, because I park far away. Like,
you
there's
do.
Tons of parking spaces. And I've walked out to my car sometimes, and there's a car snuggled up against my car, and I'm like, son of a, like, dude, there's 500 spots.
Yeah.
This is far away. Why are you snuggling up to my car here, bro?
That's a great question.
Right?
I agree with you on this.
And so it's funny, when I was pulling in today, I said, yeah, I'm taking up a little bit more of that next space.
Okay.
And I did, so I own it.
See, but if I didn't know you, and I was just,
yeah.
you were at the grocery store, and
right.
I'm walking in, I'm holding Kelsey's hand, right?
Right.
And I'm like.
You're holding the hand. And
holding
like
the hand.
She's got her one arm
yeah.
wrapped around you.
Right,
like, we're
there.
Doing all of that, right?
Uh-huh. And I see you pull in, and you
right.
park crooked or cockeyed like
yeah.
that. I'm like, hey, Kels, hold up. I got to talk to this guy. I don't know that he knows he parked that bad
right.
how much he's going to screw everybody else up.
Sure.
So I'd walk up to you and say, sir, take a look at what you did. Come back over here. And we'd stand behind his vehicle, and I'd say, look at how bad you are missing life.
Right.
Maybe you got something going on in life.
Right.
But you're going to hurt someone else's ability to get in and out of this parking spot. So I'm going to need you to get back in the car and tighten that up, please.
Oh.
And she gets embarrassed by that.
Yeah, I would too, honestly. Like,
I'm trying to help
you. Why do you feel like that's your job to do that? Like, you know what I would say?
What?
Mind your damn business. I'm going grocery shopping. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I can't lie. That's been said once or twice.
No, I wouldn't do that at a grocery store. I just park farther away.
Okay.
right? But I'm not taking up two spots at a grocery store. I'll do that here because there's plenty of parking, and I'm parking a mile away. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm parking far away. So, but I think a lot of people at a grocery store, they're just bad parkers. That's it.
That's probably true.
Yeah, that's just it. So,
but I feel like it's on me to let them know they're bad parkers.
Right, but it's not. It's really not. And like it's just a little bit of like Russian roulette there.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, that's scary then.
Yeah, because you got people that just aren't right in the head.
Yeah.
So you have to know your audience there.
Okay.
Okay. Just make sure, you know, you get a couple crazies. Next thing you know, it's a crazy world. So
if a guy gets out and has like cauliflower ear,
right?
I'm like, hey, dog.
My man.
Good parking job right there.
My man.
That's perfect. I'll
my
see you
man.
In the store.
Yeah.
Can
yeah.
I pick your tab up right. or anything?
Ah, what do you want a coffee? Starbucks is on me.
All right, let's take a time out. We're going to have a conversation with James Merrillat of DenverSports.com next. Does he believe that the MVPs are locked up coming to the Mile High City? We'll have that conversation with him next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Josh.
A chance to talk with James Merrillat of DenverSports.com. He is with us right now. James, we want to jump right into this. We can touch on a few different things, and I want to start with the Denver Nuggets. Huge, huge game tonight. Nikola Jokic downplaying a little bit as Anthony Edwards is embracing it fully. What do you make of this game tonight? Do you believe we get the return of Aaron Gordon as they're playing for the number one seed?
I think tonight is huge. I think having home court advantage was one of the biggest things toward the Nuggets winning a title last year, the fact that they got to start every series on their home court in the first three in the Western Conference before they ever traveled. They were up 2-0. Having a team having to beat you 4 out of 5, fellas, they know in the back of their minds that it's pretty much an impossible mission. And then the one time they split at home, it was against the 8 seed in Miami, and they were able to take care of business on the road. I think it's vital, and I think if you look at the Minnesota series last year, I know the Nuggets won 4-1, but that might have been their toughest series. There were two games in Denver that came down to the last possession, including Game 5. Up in Minnesota, a couple of the games were really tight. Nuggets had made a big comeback, and, you know, the big heavyset guy in the stands was waving goodbye to him. It was, you know, some good moments. It was memorable. I think not having to open up there, if they get to the Western Conference Finals and they face each other, is huge. So tonight is a big game. It's as big of a regular season game as you can have.
James, I mean, goodness, I'm shocked. We actually agree on something.
Hey.
We actually agree
we
on
just
something.
Call it a day. So.
I think so. Thanks for
done.
Your time, buddy. Okay, talk to you later. No, I'm right there with you, buddy. Let's go get that number one seed. I mean,
yeah.
Like you talked to Zach By a little bit, Dover. They act like it's our birthright to just, you know, we're just going to coast on in and win another. We got a chance to be the second ever city to have two MVPs in the same year, in Jokic and McKinnon. The only other one was L.A. with Magic and Wayne. So you do you think it's locked up? How cool do you think that would be?
I don't know that it's completely locked up. I think Jokic is a cinch unless somehow they fall apart and Oklahoma City gets the one seed. Oklahoma City hadn't played very well of late.
I think the only person that has a chance to catch Jokic, which really no one does, is Luka now. Mm-hmm. SGA is done.
Yeah, and you hear a little bit of people talking about, well, the Mavericks are a 5 seed, and look at his stats compared to when Jokic won it and the Nuggets were a 6 seed. It's like, yeah, they also didn't have Jamal, right? Like, I think their backcourt that year was Monte Morris and Facu Campazzo. They didn't have Kyrie Irving playing with Jokic. So that comparison is out there, though, because people are kind of pushing for that. Jokic is going to win it. I do think McKinnon is going to win it. I think it's a little bit of a, hey, he's had his best season. He probably should have won or could have won one. Up to this point, it'll be a shame if he gets to the end of his career and he never won a Hart Trophy. That would be that would seem like a obvious omission there. So I think he's going to get it. And in terms of, is it cool? Heck yeah, it's cool. And in terms of, is it a big deal? Stoke, I think the only other example of it happening answers that question, right? Like, L.A., as big a sports market other than New York as there is in the country. It's New York, Chicago, and L.A., and the names, it's Magic Johnson and Wayne Gretzky. That's the conversation you're in. Like, that's the company you're keeping. I think that puts you in elite category. And just gives, you know, sports fans in Denver something to hang their hat on of, hey, Dallas, hey, whatever other city that you want to talk to and talk trash to, we've done something that you haven't done. The only people that can talk trash are Wayne Gretzky and Magic Johnson fans in L.A. I'll take that all day long.
We're talking to James Merrill out of DenverSports.com. All right, James, let's change gears and talk about the Broncos. I'm sure you've seen the latest from Mel Kiper Jr., who has the Broncos taking a freaking cornerback at number 12 overall. I would imagine you'd be pretty upset about that. I think Broncos country would be pretty upset about that. You see any world where they draft a corner at 12th overall?
Oh, sure. I could believe that. Fellas, I came on the drive the night they drafted Patrick Surtain, and they asked me what my reaction was, and I kiddingly said I threw my phone across the room. I've already made an appointment for Friday, April 26th with Verizon, because I'm going to have to get a new phone if they draft a cornerback in the first round. I will be beside myself. But could I see it? Sure. I could see that. I could see George Payton talking everybody into how it's the best player on the board, and we got a roster build, and we got to, you know, buy into the nonsense that we hear every morning from the Sean Payton fan club. I could see that. I could see that of, oh, you know, we had him graded at 7, and Bo Nix was 18 at 12. That's the guy you got to go with. Like, I could definitely see that.
James, are you quarterback all the way in the first round? What would make you happy?
Well, that's a tough question. I'm not quarterback all the way, Stoke. I think Bo Nix at 12 is a reach. So, look, would I be excited and interested to go down to training camp and watch him? I would be, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and give him a shot. I don't want to mortgage the future to move up and take J.J. McCarthy. Now, if they have to move from 12 to 10, okay, you could. I'm on board with that. If you give up two first-round picks, you know, this year's, and then two more to move up to 4, I think that's a gross overpayment. To me, the perfect scenario is you take Brock Bowers at 12. That solves the fact that they have the worst tight end room in the league, and then you trade up into the end of the first round or beginning of the second round and take Michael Penix Jr. That gives you something that is a guy that can answer the question at quarterback. That's the ideal. You have to come away with something at quarterback. Does it have to be at 12? Does it have to be a splashy move? No, but Michael Penix Jr. at 33, which is or 37, I think is where Mel Kiper Jr. had him mocked, 37 going to the Rams. I would take that all day long.
James, last one I got for you, and I'm going to go up to Boulder for this one. We know you love the Buffs. You are a Buff. Would you drop $20K to go have dinner with Dion, which is what the cost is for the spring game dinner that Friday evening?
No. And, I saw that come out yesterday, and we had it at DenverSports.com. And look, I'm a huge Buffs fan. I love what Dion has done to the program. I was up there for the CU-CSU game, and the number of people wearing CU gear, it was 98%. Like, you could play a game of, like, find someone not in CU gear, and it would have been difficult. So just totally revitalized the program. But it was hard not to see that and think, man, all those people who were naysayers who think Dion is just an opportunist, they might be on to something, because that one sort of it sort of rubbed me the wrong way. Look, if you got the money, go do it. I'm not going to tell you what to do with your cash, but it just felt a little bit like, man, this is just coming in, cashing in, and then taking the bag of money and going home.
All right, James, we appreciate you, man. Keep up the great work. If you do end up getting a table and need a plus one, I'll go up there with you, man. I'll hang out with you.
All right, you're on the list.
All right,
over.
Cool. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks.
There he is, James Merrill at DenverSports.com. Always check out what they're doing over there daily. It's free, and you should consume it. DenverSports.com for all the latest. All right, want to react to a couple things James had to say, but I also want to stay up in Boulder because I want to talk about Dion now being in the Big 12. There's an article out there ranking Big 12 coaches. Where does Dion fall, and is it fair where he lands in the power rankings? We'll have that conversation next.
It's Stokely and Josh on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
All right, where does Dion rank amongst Big 12 coaches? The Buffs are on to the Big 12. They're going to start Big 12 play this year. And there are 16 coaches there in the Big 12. The list that is out right here has Dion way down. I'm scrolling. I'm going to continue to scroll here. And I get to number 12. Deion Sanders, Colorado. And here's what's written about Dion at On3. Because all of the bluster and talk about, do you believe, many viewed year one as a failure for Deion Sanders. I don't know. You talk to the same people I know. It wasn't, they say. The bus went 4-8 in Coach Prime's first season in Boulder, a legitimate success story for a team that was 1-11 and lost games by an average of 6 touchdowns in 2022. That's kind of what you and I have been talking about, from who they were to what they are now. We talk about them. We pay attention to them. That was a change for the Colorado Buffaloes for Deion. So they have him listed as 12, and they go on to say, hey, it's now about expectations. You have to go and win more games than the 4 games that they won a year ago with what you've done to the roster. But there are a couple of coaches in front of them. Dave Arnotta at Baylor. I mean, the top dogs, you know, that they are a better coach inside the Big 12 than what Deion is going to do. But do you think that's about right, Stoke? Does he just have... I guess he doesn't have a lot on the resume, and that can kind of be held against him because of what they did in year one. Sure, it was better, but it's not like they did, at least for me, enough to go, okay, they're going to go and be a top dog in the Big 12 now in year number one.
Well, it's going to be a challenge, obviously, and I think with Deion, there's still a lot of people that are skeptical. You know, he's just at the 1A level has just been doing it for 1 year, and that was it. I thought it was... a great turnaround to get to where they got to and to be competitive in some of the games where the year before they just, you know, they were like a, you know, they were a minor league team. So to get this program into the spotlight and headed back in the right direction, I thought he did a great job. He's not an X's and O's coach. You look at losing both of his coordinators is not ideal in this situation. So, look, I think you just still have a lot of people that are skeptical and doubtful that he's going to stay and he's going to get it done and that he's an elite coach. And, yeah, he's an elite recruiter, but are you an elite coach? There's two different things.
You're right that it is two different things. I've kind of gone back and forth with this about, okay, perfect coach. Like Nick Saban was an elite recruiter and a great coach, right? And Deion can maybe get to that spot. I don't know if he's going to be a Nick Saban type of coach, X's and O's guy. But do you have to be that elite level head coach, you know, play caller, designer, to be successful at the college level, at any level really, like especially college, because we're talking about how he can recruit. Can't you look at Deion as, yeah, his job is to recruit, motivate, and then put his coaches in the position to succeed?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, be the CEO.
Yeah, there you go.
And you know what? You're going to let your coaches do their job. But guess what you have to do?
What do you got to do?
You don't want to guess?
No, because I was going to get it wrong.
Kisner wants to guess. No. You have to hire great coaches. I knew that was what you were going to say. You just didn't want to take
I had a hard. I have a hard time like being like, you got to hire the right coaches. Now talk to me about Pat Shurmur.
Right. Yes, exactly. So obviously, look, that's what I'm talking about. His offensive defense coordinator from last year, both gone. Starting over. Got a guy from Cincinnati, the Bengals.
Yeah,
as your defensive coordinator. I don't even think he's ever called plays in college. Mm. And I don't think. And you got Pat Shurmur, a former, like, this guy's an NFL coach. And he's your offensive coordinator. I'm just like, that's the problem here, right? You know, you look at Nick Saban's coaching tree and the guys that he had under him, the coaches like Kirby Smarts of the world and, you know, all these guys that end up being great head coaches and doing a really good job, you know, those were his coaches, his offensive and defensive coordinators, and you certainly don't want to be starting over after year one with your two highest coaches on your coaching staff. That's not ideal at all. We'll see what it looks like. But Deion has the other stuff checked, right?
He's,
you know, he motivates. He's really good with the kids, you can tell. And he can recruit. But, man, you got to be able to hire the right coaches and be able to keep them.
Where do you think if we had Deion, let's throw Deion, Tad, Nico, Jay Norvell. What if we ranked those four? College coaches. Coaches. All that's incorporated, obviously. Like, what would your power rankings be of the college coaches there at CSU and CU, just in football and basketball?
Yeah, that's difficult. Obviously, two different sports, and you're talking about, you know, I mean, Deion just got there. Norvell just pretty much got there also. Mm-hmm. And then who are the other two?
Just basketball coaches, Tad Boyle and Nico Medved.
Yeah. How long has Medved been there? I mean, Chad's been there for a while. Okay, Dion, Jay, and then the other two guys. Whatever. Okay.
So you would put Dion above Jay. That's the question, right? Is Dion above Jay?
I guess.
Dion's a better recruiter, but Jay's a better coach.
It could be flip-flopped. Certainly, you see what Jay did at Nevada and how he almost beat CU last year, right? Well, that would have shocked the world. So I don't know. Yeah, I'll just keep it like that. What do you think?
I'm probably with you because I think, at least for what Dion is doing, his recruiting ability means more to me for the Buffaloes than his coaching ability. I don't like that it's Pat Shurmur. I don't like that Robert Livingston hasn't called a play, and you were right on that, Stoke. He's never called a play as a coordinator on the defense. But his recruiting ability, like Dion, just by being Dion, this is obvious, is going to get 10 times the players that Jay Norvell is, but Jay Norvell is the better coach. But, you know, if my son is going to play college football, do I want him to play for Deion Sanders or Jay Norvell? I mean, come on. We know what the answer is for everybody, even you 970 texters.
See, that's a tricky slope because part of the deal, part of being a great coach is having great coaches under you. Unless you're gonna do all the heavy lifting, which Deion's not gonna do, so like you gotta hire the right guys. That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
If you're a great recruiter, but you got bad assistant coaches, guess what? You're gonna be getting stuck in mud here. 4 or 5 win team consistently. So that's not the way to develop chemistry and continuity and build a winner. That's just, I mean, especially at a program like CU, that's just not. I mean, you got to have really good coaches underneath you that are coaching the right way, that are able to develop some kids, take them from good to great, from average to, you know, really good. But you need that consistency. And I don't know what they have over there. And it doesn't look good whenever both your coordinators leave after 1 year. It just doesn't look good. But that's on your head. That's on the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of being a great head coach.
And we still don't know, was it Sean Lewis? That was his name, right?
Yeah.
That we don't know the full side of that. I don't know that we ever will, but you don't lose your job, your title, in the middle of the season and then leave after, I guess you do if you've lost your title. But, like, it wasn't just a difference of philosophy. I think there's so much more to that story that we may never know.
Well, you know, that could be the case. But I think listening to Shador talk about why he held the ball so long in certain situations, took too many sacks, you know, those types of things was, you know, that the offense that Sean Lewis had implemented for him didn't fit his skill set and didn't fit the skill set of the personnel around him. And so that's why you saw him holding the football a lot. And I think you could see a situation to where it's like, all right, hey, that's, you know, Dion, that's not my son's strength here. Let's do something else.
Yeah, yeah.
And Shador kind of saying the same thing, and Sean Lewis saying, well, this is my offense. This is what we're going to do. This is how I view successful offensive football, and just coming to a head.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Pat over there behind him. Mm-hmm. Dion, well, I'll run it the way you want to run it.
Yeah, right?
The consultant. The good old consultant rule, right? Just that, ask Doc Rivers about that.
Yeah.
It's a great job to have. So I could see how that could become something that was small. And then when it's not successful, right, like it was early in the season, everything's great after the first game.
Heck yeah.
Right? But then all of a sudden it becomes a struggle. And then now Dion's like, hey, bro, what's going on here? This is not my son's style. And then just finally saying, all right,
I'm out.
Sorry, we got to change here.
All right, what do you think of it, Buffs fans? Rams fans, how would you rank the coaches up there? Is Dion or Jay the best college football coach in the Mile High right now? Tell us at 303-713-1043. All right, Nate was great for the Avs last night. He probably locked up the Hart Trophy, but there are a couple things that we're still seeing and need to worry about with this Avs team as the regular season winds down. We'll discuss next.